quote the Ramones, I don't want to be buried in a pet cemetery. Not only because I don't want to come to life again, like in the Stephen King novel, but it's just not really my style.
Lauren, you might not want that, but apparently some people might think it's an attractive option.
Just take the late French actor, Alain Delon. He died this summer, and people were worried that he would try to have his dog buried with him. You see, in a 2018 interview, Delon said that he had a special relationship with the Belgian Malinois dog and that he wanted it to come with him in the grave if he died first. That's the headline we're looking into today.
Yeah, reports reveal, by the way, you're French. Outstanding.
I think that was really bad, but I...
No, it was Oz's Alain Delon. Anyway, reports revealed that the dog was spared and allowed to live at one of the actor's homes in France.
But we still had questions, like how often do people try to get buried with their pets and how often do they succeed?
So I talked about all that with an expert, Paul Koudenaris, who's written a book about it. He's the author of Faithful Unto Death, Pet Cemeteries, Animal Graves, and Eternal Devotion. And he's written other books on animals and death as well. I'm your host, Mike Rogers, and this is Something Offbeat. What did this guy do?
Well, this guy wants to have his dog euthanized and buried with him. This is something that it comes up in the news every few years, you know, and I'll get asked about it. It's because people are so shocked. It's like, you know, this is some great form of animal cruelty. You're going to euthanize a perfectly healthy dog or a cat and try to have them buried with you. In fact, this is a very old practice. It goes back all the way to the ancient world. You know, if you go to the Cairo Museum, you'll find all kinds of mummified dogs and gazelles and baboons that had been some pharaoh's pet that were most likely killed and placed in their tomb alongside of them. So it's not like this is something new with this French actor. This is something that's actually very old that just kind of fell out of practice. But about every 5 years or so, it comes up. There was a case about, it was 5 years ago with a Shih Tzu in Virginia where the woman had died and she left instructions in her will that the animal was to be euthanized and buried with her. 5 years before, there was a lady in Indiana who had died. And in her will, there were explicit instructions that her German Shepherd was going to be euthanized and buried with her.
Just a quick aside, according to Titan Casket, there are no federal laws around burials in the U.S. That means you would have to check your state or even municipal law to make sure that your plans for deceased pets are actually legal.
And that also means that even burials on the pet owner's property may have to meet certain requirements to make sure that they're sanitary.
So how do these laws apply to people who want to be buried with their pets? Koudenaris explained it for us.
One of the first questions everyone's going to ask about this is like, well, okay, well, this is obviously a terrible form of animal cruelty. Can this be legal? Unfortunately, the answer is yes. It's absolutely 100% legal. And to understand that, you have to understand the legal status of animals. You know, legally, an animal is considered in the same category as a possession. Legally, there are obviously more protections for humane behavior for animals than there are for, say, your car. But legally, your animal is a possession just like your car. And if you died and left in your will, it's like, okay, well, I want my car, a perfectly fine car, taken to a junkyard and destroyed. Your estate would have to abide by that. And so it puts people who... the trustees of estates in an awkward position if this is in the will.
That just shocks me that that would be legal. I guess the thinking perhaps on some of these pet owners is, well, you know, when I die, there's not going to be anyone left to take care of them. So they may as well come with.
It's kind of a gross form of hubris. You know, it's like only I can take care of Fluffy the way she needs to be taken care of. No one else can give Fluffy that love. What tends to happen in these cases, Mike, is oftentimes, as I said, it puts the trustees of an estate in a very awkward position because usually they don't want to do this, right? They don't want to put down this perfectly healthy animal. So in the case of the Shih Tzu that I mentioned in Virginia, that dog was euthanized. That dog, a perfectly healthy Shih Tzu, was euthanized by the dictates of this person's will. In the case of that German Shepherd, they found a way out of it, and they found a loophole to send it to a rescue in Utah. The other question is, okay, sometimes this apparently succeeds. Sometimes reason wins out, you know, reason wins out over the dictates of the person's testament. Sometimes reason wins out and the animal is saved. Sometimes it does not and the animal is put down.
But there's a catch.
So does that mean then that this Shih Tzu that was put down in Virginia, that it is in fact buried with the owner? And here's the funny thing. The people who are putting this in their will are grossly mistaken about the results of this kind of behavior, because obviously in the United States, there are many different jurisdictions and they'll all be different. And in France, the regulations will be different, but almost all the regulations prohibit the burial of animals in cemeteries intended for humans. It's just a tradition that goes all the way back to the old churchyard cemeteries, where you had to be a member of the faith of the congregation to be buried in the churchyard, and animals weren't. So animals weren't allowed in those cemeteries. They weren't allowed to be buried next to people the way they had been in the pagan world. And so this still holds today. So that Shih Tzu was put down, but that Shih Tzu wasn't actually buried next to its owner.
And it defeats the purpose.
Completely defeats the purpose. But another irony in this is that if these people knew what they were doing, they could actually get it done. There's a way to get done what they want. It's just that they're looking at it backwards. You can, as a human, be buried in many pet cemeteries in the United States. They're just not allowed to advertise the service. I think it's because the funeral industry, the cemetery industry in the United States is so huge, they don't want the competition. They don't want people to know. It's like, well, wait a minute. I could be buried next to Fluffy instead of next to Uncle Ted. Hell, I'll be buried next to Fluffy, even if it's in a pet cemetery, right? And so many pet cemeteries, for instance, Hartsdale Pet Cemetery in New York, the oldest pet cemetery in the United States, it allows people to be buried there. The caveat is it has to be cremated remains, because then they're no longer really considered a human remain once they're cremated. So if you are cremated, you can be buried next to your pet in a pet cemetery. But this idea that you want your pet buried in a human cemetery, good luck. It's very difficult to do.
So it is legal to request to have your pet put down when you die. It is illegal for that pet to be buried with you in most human cemeteries, but you can be buried in a pet cemetery. Do I have all that right?
Exactly. Again, you know, in terms of the legality, we're generalizing here. There are so many different jurisdictions, obviously, but as a general rule, you're going to find that it is against local regulations to have your animal buried in a human cemetery, or even if it's not against the local regulations, the cemetery, if you take a place like Forest Lawn, you know, which is like the McDonald's of the cemetery industry, they are not, even if they were allowed to, they will not allow a pet to be buried in those grounds because they know they might lose business. There are people who will say, ooh, wait a minute, Forest Lawn buried a dog? I don't think I want Granny buried in the ground next to a dog.
Even if it's cremated remains?
Absolutely not. There is a way. There is another way. There is a backdoor way.
Let's put a pin in that for a second. Mike, I have a confession.
Oh, I can't wait. Go ahead.
Paul showed up a little bit early for our Zoom interview, and before you got in, I asked him a bunch of questions about deceased pet movies. I got to Pet Sematary and Frankenweenie, but I could have covered more. There's Marley and Me, My Dog Skip. Luckily for the guest, you showed up and saved him from that. But I do want to ask if you have a favorite sad pet movie.
Well, I'm old enough to remember Old Yeller. Young Mike shed some tears over that one. And
yeah.
You mentioned Marley and Me. Marley and Me was gut-wrenching. But interestingly, the one that still haunts me was I Am Legend. Remember Will Smith had that German Shepherd that protected him against the zombies and then got bitten and died?
That was the saddest part of that movie. Yes, I do remember that. Yeah. And the other reason why I was asking that is that in this part of the interview coming up, you guys get into some trivia about the animal stars of Hollywood. I was impressed, Mike, with your knowledge.
And I know what you're talking about. And I only made that reference because I watched a lot of TV as a kid. That should be obvious. So let's take that pin out and dig into this loophole that Kudinaris mentioned.
Do you know who a guy named Frank Inn is? I-N-N.
Yes, one of the great animal trainers in Hollywood history.
Yes, well done.
He was Lassie's trainer.
No. He was the trainer of Higgins, who played Benji.
Oh, no, you're right. I'm thinking of Rudd Weatherwax.
Good, well done. Rudd Weatherwax is the Lassie's trainer. Yes, Frank Inn.
But for Frank Inn, now Frank Inn, I'm sorry, and I'm interrupting you here, but wasn't he the trainer of Arnold the Pig on Green Acres?
Arnold the Pig on Green Acres, Higgins the dog who played Benji, and Orangey the cat, who is the cat from Breakfast at Tiffany's. Those were like the big three. And it is rumored, according to his friends, it has never been proven, but it is rumored, you know, when I was working on my Pet Sematary book, Faithful Unto Death, I was trying to track down all the famous animal burials. Okay, what happened to Higgins, the dog who played Benji? That's a big name. I'd like to track that down, right? Well, according to all Frank Inn's friends, the reason that there is no grave anywhere for Higgins or Orangey the cat or Arnold Ziffel the pig is because Frank Inn had them cremated when they died and had his friends sew the ashes into the pockets of his suit so he could be with them forever. So there is a back doorway. Now, Forest Lawn absolutely denies that this is true, but that doesn't prevent people from periodically showing up at Frank Inn's grave and leaving little Benji mementos.
That is the most awesome thing I've ever heard.
Well, it makes sense. It makes sense. You know, it's like if you're not going to be able to do it officially, who's going to check the pockets of your suit for ash?
I have to say, I've never thought of keeping my dead pet's ashes in my pockets. I know that I've flushed some goldfish down the toilet, and when my childhood dog died, my mom handled what came after, so I'm not exactly sure where we put him. But I was wondering, have you ever buried a pet?
Many. We have three cats buried around our current house, which I probably shouldn't mention in case we ever have to sell it. That might be illegal. And I buried a dog at our old house, and I nearly broke a gas pipe in the process. It could have been an explosive funeral.
Wow. Well, I don't know if it's going to be that hard of a selling point. I would like to have ghost cats protecting me if I bought a house.
That's a good point. What are some of the most interesting pet cemeteries? Are there a lot more of them around now than there used to be? I think it seems to be.
Well, it depends on when you mean used to be. The first urban pet cemetery wasn't until 1881, so it is a modern phenomenon. One thing that I have to point out, it seems counterintuitive because our relationship with animals is timeless, but it changes over time. Pets as we know them as this multi-billion dollar industry, considering them as members of the family across a massive societal scale, this ethic of kindness and humane treatment to animals, this all comes in the 19th century. So the 19th century is the birth of pets as we know them. And there was this, you know, problem with how to dispose of them because there were no burial grounds for them. Cremation was not even being practiced for human beings through most of the 19th century, so you couldn't cremate them. So you really just had to dump them or take pets to a rending plant and have them thrown in a vat with broken down cows and horses and have them melted down into glue, which obviously most pet owners would be very opposed to. You know, an animal who had lived and been loved as a member of the family doesn't deserve that end. And so pet cemeteries, as we know them, were born in the 1880s, and they grew rapidly after that, rapidly. The United States, by the way, has more pet cemeteries than the rest of the world combined, so we've really got a lot of them here.
Do you have a favorite pet grave?
That's a hard one because all of them have meaning. I always say behind every grave is a story. And sometimes those stories are spectacular. And sometimes they're just personal and intimate. But every story is as valuable as the next. But I will rephrase your question if that's okay. Do I have a most spectacular story about a pet's grave? And I will say yes for that, for sure. Are you familiar with a horned toad in Texas by the name of Rip?
Rip, no.
Okay, so Rip is the only famous horned toad ever. Rip had been encased in the cornerstone of a courthouse in Texas in the 1890s because they wanted to test this theory about whether horned toads could hibernate for long periods of time. They waited 31 years before they took him out, and unbelievably, trapped in a cornerstone of a courthouse for 31 years with no food, no water, and no air, this thing survived. It came back to life. It was like comatose, and it came back to life. It becomes a celebrity. It becomes the only horned toad to ever receive an invitation to visit the president in the White House. And then it dies again. And when it dies again, they put it in a glass-topped casket back in the courthouse on view because it's the most famous resident ever of Eastland, Texas. And then it is kidnapped. In 1961, it is stolen and they receive a ransom note. They want $10,000. They get this horned toad back. It's kidnapped again in the 1970s. They get it back. And then they get another letter in 76 telling them, it's like, no, you don't have it. You only think you have it. I still have it and I want $5,000. So I had to research this story. And it turns out that whoever stole it in 1972 still has that toad, because when I went and I got old photos and compared all the photos, the horned toad sitting in that grave now is an imposter. It is not the original Rip. And so that is a very, very weird story.
That is absolutely bizarre. You know, one thing I think that your research really speaks to is the connection that so many of us have to our pets.
Oh, sure. You know, I have always said about this book that I wrote on pet cemeteries that it's only ostensibly a book about cemeteries. It's a book about connections and it's a book about love.
What about you? You got pets?
I have three cats. My book before this was a history of domestic cats. It was called A Cat's Tale and was written titularly by one of my cats, Baba. So my cat actually won a Barnes & Noble Book of the Year award, which I myself have never won.
Are you going to take any of them with you?
That's a good question. I hope to not have to think about that question for several more years. What I have done, I do get that question a lot because I've written about pet cemeteries. You know, what do you do with your animals when they die? What I've been doing is burying, because I live in the desert and I've been burying them out in the desert. And I'll go back after a few years after the hot sands have cleaned off the bones. And I'll take some of the bones back. I'll take the skull or some of the bones back. And then I'll build a little reliquary for them as if they were saints or something. So I have these little reliquaries for some of my favorite pets.
Here's how all that started.
Well, it started because I was moving. And when I was moving, I had a cat buried in my backyard. And I was like, oh boy, what do I do about you? Right? I don't wanna leave my buddy behind, you know, in a house that I'll no longer have access to. So I said, well, I gotta take you with. I gotta exhume you and take you with and rebury you somewhere or something. And then when I got the bones out, I kind of like, well, there you are. And I still love you no matter the condition. And the bones were all cleaned off. So I said, I'm not going to bury you again. I'm just going to make a little reliquary for you. And you can kind of be here in the bedroom.
You know, I shouldn't say anything. I've got a couple of boxes of ashes at home, you know, sitting on the desk. So you never want to part with them.
No, you don't, because they were a part of your life and a part of your heart. The thing I say about pets is that I would never claim that the grief is worse when a pet dies. Some people have told me they feel that. I don't think it's worse. I think it's just different. It's a different kind of grief, and it hurts differently. And I think the reason it hurts so bad is because it's a grief we're not accustomed to at all. You know, a pet is not a tabula rasa, but it kind of conforms to us in such a way that it becomes a mirror of us. It becomes a part of our personality in a way that another person never does. Because with another person, no matter how much you love them or how close you are to them, they are always a discrete individual. A pet becomes a part of us. They become an extension of the owner. And so when a pet dies, it's really like losing a piece of yourself, like a piece of you dies that you'll never get back again. So it's a very different kind of grief, and it's a very painful grief, especially for people who have never experienced it before.
It absolutely is. And a fascinating subject, the name of the book, Faithful Unto Death: Pet Cemeteries, Animal Graves, and Eternal Devotion. Paul, thank you so much for taking a few minutes to speak with us. I'm Mike Rogers. Thanks so much for listening to Something Offbeats. This episode written and produced by Lauren Berry and Chris Blake, with audio editing by Chris Blake and original music by Myron Kaplan.
Now, to keep listening, please subscribe to us on the Odyssey app, Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcasts. And if you have your own offbeat story that you think we should cover, send it to us at somethingoffbeat@odyssey.com.